This video is sponsored by Dashlane. Protect your passwords free for 30 days with the link in the description. When the United States gets hungry, and we do that a lot, we like to hop in our car, preferably not get out of our car, and pay an absurdly small amount of money. Fast food or quick service restaurants are a $256 billion a year business made $1 or $2 or $5 at a time. Globally, there are 20,000 KFCs, 30,000 Starbucks, 37,000 McDonald's, and more than any other, 43,000 Subways. There's one in every US state, every US territory except American Samoa, schools, churches, and casinos. One even was hydraulically lifted above New York's Freedom Tower during its construction to accommodate workers who didn't have enough time during their lunch break to go down to ground level. Subway, like many companies, got so big by outsourcing its growth, allowing just about anyone, just about anywhere, to open their own location. It's the poster child for franchising, growing 22% during the worst recession in 75 years. But it's also a perfect example of what can go terribly wrong. In 2017, Subway lost over 900 US stores, and the $5 footlong, the catalyst behind the company's insane growth, became the source of its downfall. So why do some companies choose to share their business model when they could just keep all the profit themselves? If you A, like the idea of being your own boss, and B, know how to cook, you might be tempted to start a restaurant. Something like 1,000 new independent restaurants open each year in the US, and it's easy to see why. The average American spends 13% of their income on food, nearly half of which is eating out. Gyms and travel agencies are fickle, but almost everyone needs to eat. And starting a restaurant can cost as little as $100,000, which, while not exactly cheap, is relatively accessible for many people with loans. But of course, it's much easier said than done. The idea of not having a boss sounds great until you realize that means working long hours, getting paid last, and being responsible for every little thing that goes wrong. People often choose to open a Mexican restaurant because that's what they like, or a gym because they like working out, but soon find that managing a business and eating tacos are two very distinct skills. Restaurants also have extremely high turnover and often employ family members, which makes firing them especially difficult. It's a myth that 90% of restaurants fail in the first year, but the truth is still not very promising. About a third in the first year and two-thirds after three. Although this does include change of ownership, and sometimes owners are just ready to move on. Regardless, it's not an easy feat. So if you do succeed, you tend to get a little confident. If you can turn a $100,000 loan into a $100,000 profit in a few years, why stop there? A second restaurant could double your income, at least, because now you have experience. The truth is, no matter how successful you are, you haven't yet proven the business model. You've proven the business model at this location with these employees this year. Breaking into a new market isn't easy, even for the biggest companies on earth. Amazon failed in China, Uber in Korea, and for a long time, Dunkin' in California. A smart business owner knows each and every new location is a huge opportunity and a huge risk. Enter the franchise. It's easy to see a company like Subway as an unstoppable giant, but one day it was just a 17-year-old kid in Connecticut trying to pay his way through medical school, and opening a second location meant gambling everything. The beauty of franchising for the franchisor, that is, the larger company, is that it shifts some of that risk to the franchisee, the person who pays to open a new location, and usually buys or leases the land, building, and equipment. Every franchise is different, but here's how it generally works. First, anyone who meets the minimum requirements can apply to open a new location. The potential franchisee and an agent representing the franchisor will then interview each other, deciding whether it's a good fit. This culminates in what's called the Discovery Day, where the candidate flies to the company's headquarters, meets its executives, and sees its operations firsthand before making a final decision. If both parties are satisfied, they sign a franchise agreement, which has three main components. First, it sets the length of the contract. A franchise is really a lease, and when it expires, usually in 5 to 10 years, both parties have to agree to renew it. Otherwise, the franchisee is simply out of luck. Second, it outlines the costs. There's an upfront, one-time franchise fee, think $10,000 to $50,000, and an ongoing royalty, say 4 to 15% of all revenue. Finally, the franchise agreement lays out, in great detail, exact requirements for doing business, from how everything is made, what's on the menu, and often what hours it must be open, sometimes on Christmas. The goal is to maintain consistency. Every McDonald's and Subway and Dunkin' should look, smell, and feel the same. Without these strict standards, individual stores could coast on the success of the brand as a whole, while cutting corners and saving money. For the franchisee, this model is attractive because it's relatively safe. If people like McDonald's fries in DC, you can pretty safely bet they'll also like them in Portland. And when the time comes, it's much easier to sell a Pizza Hut than a generic Bob's Local Pizza. You probably won't be as rich as, say, a successful tech startup, but you'll also sleep much better at night, knowing that while your income ceiling is much lower, the floor is much higher. The secret to Subway's success is that stability combined with low barriers to entry. Its franchise fee is just $15,000, in total about a tenth of the cost to open a McDonald's. They're also quite small, just 1,200 square feet on average compared to McDonald's 4,500. In 2013, Subway opened 50 new locations a week. That's 7 every single day on average. But don't confuse Subway's success with its franchisees. Companies like to portray franchising as a sort of economic marriage. Both wish the other success while the corporation provides support and guidance. The reality, though, is often much different. The local owner of a Subway, for example, might argue that while he or she is in the business of selling sandwiches, Subway, the corporation, is really in the business of selling its logo. Because it doesn't own any of its stores but makes a minimum of 15 grand no matter how successful they are, it's incentivized to open lots of locations, regardless of how qualified the applicants. Unless they have exclusive territory agreements, longtime franchisees may find themselves competing with another Subway, or 6, within a mile radius. And they often find franchise agreements overly restrictive. Sure, you don't have to come up with new recipes or find the right equipment, just follow the instructions, but you also don't get to if you have a better idea. This tension became an all-out war with the $5 footlong. It started as a brilliant idea. Something about that clean, even $5 price attracted customers like nothing else in the company's history. Now, one would assume a $6 footlong would sell about 20% worse, because, you know, math. But one would also assume no one would eat disgusting cashews, and yet you goons gobble them up like crazy. The point is, people are weird, and in the 15 years since the $5 footlong was introduced, haven't gotten any less weird. In fact, weirder, probably. But while we still like nice round numbers, because of inflation, $5 $2004 is now equivalent to about $6.78. Not to mention the rising cost of labor, land, and health insurance, which also vary considerably by region. In other words, Subway is making a lot less money for the same price. Well, Subway franchisees, that is. Because remember, Subway Incorporated takes a cut of revenue, not profit. The promotion was great for the corporation. It even threatened to sue other chains who used the term footlong in advertising the length of their sandwiches. And when an Australian teenager complained that his sandwich was only 11 inches long, Subway argued it's footlong, not footlong. Clearly, it's a descriptive name for the product, not intended to be a measurement of length. Duh. In 2004, Subway switched to a $6 combo with a drink and cookie or chips, but it wasn't nearly as successful. And after much fighting, the company finally made the $5 promotion optional for franchisees in 2018. The damage, it seems, was already done. Subway fell into the franchise trap, focusing only on growth to the detriment of its existing locations. Meanwhile, people's preferences simply moved on. At their best, franchises represent the American dream. Anyone with an entrepreneurial appetite and even the most modest savings can go from working in a convenience store to owning one in a matter of years. But like anywhere money is made, there tend to be a few big winners, the owners of 5, 10, 50 locations who've optimized for everything, and many others barely scraping by, despite not uncommonly making $1 million in revenue per store each year. Franchising can be a great opportunity, but it's important to remember that each new location is a new risk. Not just that it will fail, but everything you own will. Likewise, every time you sign up for a new website or app, you risk having not just its, but all your accounts hacked if you use the same or similar password. Dashlane protects you by generating a new, unique password for each and every website, and then remembers and fills them for you so you never have to. Even better, you can get the password manager and a VPN for less than the price of each separately. The truth is, no one wants to think about security. You just want to be automatically protected, and Dashlane makes it all so seamless that there's really no reason not to. Use the link in the description to get a free 30-day trial of Dashlane Premium, and if you like it, use my code POLYMATTER to get 10% off. Thanks to Dashlane, and to you for watching this video.